Hello, cinephiles, and welcome to Indie Outlook, the show that sheds light on must-see cinema from the Windy City and around the globe. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm of HollywoodChicago.com. Well, today I'm joined by Chicago filmmaker Nathan Adloff. His improv-based shorts, Untied Strangers and Irregular Fruit, both won the jury prize at the Lake County Film Festival, and his feature debut, Nate and Margaret, has been chosen as the closing night selection at Film Out San Diego's 14th annual LGBT Film Festival. The film stars Natalie West of Roseanne fame as Margaret, a 52-year-old aspiring stand-up comic whose best friend is Nate, a 19-year-old openly gay film student played by the wonderful young actor Tyler Ross. The film also stars Connor McCahill and Gabby Hoffman and will make its Chicago premiere June 8th at the Gene Siskel Film Center. Welcome to the program, Nate.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, you referred to this film as a gay Harold and Maude without the sex, which I thought was, that could almost be the tagline if you wanted it to be. But what made you want to explore the friendship between older woman, younger man?
Well, I don't think it's, I haven't seen it been done before. I mean, Harold and Maude is one of my favorite movies, and I have been leaning towards, you know, making queer films, and I wanted to sort of put a spin on that genre. So, and I couldn't think of another project that I'd seen, another film that had presented that sort of friendship between a young gay man and an older straight character, in this case, a woman. So.
Yeah, well, and it's very interesting because I'll never forget when The Sixth Sense came out, there was a poll that was like, what was the demographics that showed up to this? And it was young men and then old women. And I was like, there's some kind of similarity there. There's something that attracts, you know, these sort of relationships. Like, I myself have a great relationship with my grandma, you know, it's like we can talk about anything. It's interesting what attracts, you know, older women, younger men to have some kind of friendship. Because they're going through similar stages. They're both, at least in your film, they're going through transitional stages in their life. So that's one kind of correlation, I guess you can make.
Yeah, and I think, and a lot of this film is based on true things that happened to me in college. The more we wrote it, the less true it became, but there are still pieces of true events and bad decisions made by me in college. And I think Margaret is sort of a, came out of that, you know, friends that I met in college and sort of oddballs, you know, people that didn't have a lot of friends, I sort of was attracted to for some reason. And so I think Margaret was also kind of formed out of that basis too.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because they're both kind of outcasts. I said he's openly gay, but one of the interesting things about it is that he came from a small town. He's like many people who are exploring their sexuality for the first time, and he's not entirely sure, you know, who that first partner, who that first boyfriend is going to be. And so he's on the cusp of exploring that as she's exploring herself as the stand-up comedian, is kind of, you know, trying to see, you know, where's the real comedy that people are going to connect with come from? And it comes from this place of pain. And I'm wondering, like, did you study any stand-up comics? Did you to kind of prepare her material for the thing?
No. So I co-wrote the film with my good friend Justin Palmer, and Margaret is actually based on him.
Oh, really?
And he's been the aspiring stand-up comic his whole life. So he drew from that. He's scared to death of trying it and failing, you know, bombing on stage, as we see happening painfully in the movie to Margaret.
Yeah.
So Margaret was sort of his baby, and Nate was, you know, my side of things. So for me, no, I've, you know, never been interested in doing that. I don't think I would succeed, but maybe someday.
Well, it's interesting that you say, you know, it's autobiographical, and it seems like with some filmmakers I talk to, they say the best, like, calling card, the first film you do should, like, work within a genre. You should try to master the genre, work within it. It's like, I can do this, what else can I do? But I think the trickier thing to do for your first film is to make it something very personal that comes from inside, but find something that's universally relatable. That's what Lena Dunham's doing with Tiny Furniture and Girls. And I think that's what made you want to go the personal route with your feature debut?
Well, I mean, everyone, you know, people say write what you know, and I think it's really true. I've you know, with my short films, I've been very happy with them, but in a certain sense, I wanted to just put out what has happened to me, you know, just because I had so much to say about it and so much detail that just was already there. And so when Justin and I got together, it just, I wouldn't say it wrote itself, but there was just so much more that we could put on paper right away than, you know, just sitting and thinking of ideas and, you know, scrapping ideas. And we just wanted to go, you know, with the true to life stuff, just because it came naturally and just, you know, I don't know, it just felt right.
Sure. And it originally had based on a true story somewhere. Yeah, it was originally something like that. But I mean, it was basically when Natalie West, you know, she's a big name. She's had a wonderful career with Roseanne, mm-hmm. you know, that she expressed interest. You were able to write a role for her. You were able to kind of like make the role more about it. What was that process like, and how did that project kind of evolve from that point?
Yeah, so Justin and I, you know, knocked our brains together and came up with this idea of having two characters, both based on completely true stories. Nate was always there and always me. And we sort of began writing outlines, and we actually posted a bunch of ads on Craigslist looking for pieces from people's real life to fabricate in, you know, combine into this female character who was originally conceived as her age was much closer to Nate's. So we got that ball rolling a little bit. We got some really interesting stories, and we were starting to form those for this other character. But then just through talking, Justin said that he knew Natalie West through the theater world here in Chicago. And I was, you know, a huge fan of her growing up. And it just sort of came to us both, you know, we should meet with her and see if she would be interested in being in this movie, and maybe we could just make the female character her. And if she's interested, we're so early on in the writing process, we could just write it for her. And we met with her and a couple times and pitched the idea to her, and she was on board, so we got to do that. It was quite an honor to write that part for her.
Absolutely. And you had worked with her on Bad Sides too, which
sort of in between this. It was kind of a weird time. We had talked about doing this web series before starting to write Nate and Margaret. And then we'd met with Natalie, sort of began outlining Nate and Margaret, but then we still had Bad Sides that we wanted to do, and we were ready. And we asked her if she would play a fictionalized version of herself in it. And it went extremely well. I'm really glad about that. It was kind of a test run, you know, see if she liked us.
Yeah, because this film is about all these fake auditions. Danny Rhodes, who plays this kind of like self-obsessed, you know, spoiled director. And he's basically telling Natalie West, can you play Crystal for me? Can you do this like Crystal? You know, it's like the worst thing
to
say to an actor.
The worst thing you could ask.
Like, can you play your one role? So, I mean, and it was very funny. And so you probably got some sense of what her comedic sensibilities are. And then so that was a way you could kind of mold that to the
character. For sure.
Character.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't have asked for a better experience working with her on that, and of course Nate and Margaret.
Yeah, absolutely.
She just is so giving and funny, and, you know, gets her sense of humor, has kind of the same sense of humor as Justin and I, and it was just really wonderful.
Absolutely, yeah. And so basically, your experience on these past film sets, because you've acted in many things before, Joe Swanberg's Young American Bodies and Blackmail Boys by the Shemansky Brothers. What experience from those did you bring to this set, as far as, did any of that help as far as your approach to directing the actors, not telling them too much, giving them enough guidance, that sort of thing?
Certainly. And even after Nate and Margaret, I've tried to contact filmmakers that I know to visit their sets and see how they direct, because I realized with my shorts, it didn't really hit me because it was so laid back, and it was just a bunch of friends, you know, just shooting something and improvising. Sure. And then with and even Young American Bodies, it was just like that. Blackmail Boys, kind of like that, you know. It was mostly improvised. And then Nate and Margaret came, even bad, it was sort of leading up, it sort of built this feeling of, do I know what I'm doing?
Yeah.
You know,
sure.
Do I know how to direct this movie with, you know, Natalie West and Gabby Hoffman and, you know, these seasoned actors? And I just told myself I had to not think that way and just do what felt right, and it seemed to work out fine. So
yeah, and did it seem like they had expectations from their director? Like, did they ever come to you like asking for direction, or how that sort of go?
Sure. Yeah. And you know, there was never a situation where I was like, I don't know, just let's just shoot it. I don't know, you know. And I had Justin there too, my co-writer, and it was I, you know, couldn't have done it without him to lean on, you know, with new lines, you know, to write in 2 seconds. And if the line wasn't working, you know, we would pair up and just, you know, figure it out right there.
But, well, and when you're putting that pressure cooker of a situation, you know, on a film set, that's when the intuition probably really kicks in. And especially when you're with Justin Palmer, you wrote the script together. That's probably what helps make the direction come more naturally.
Absolutely.
I suppose, definitely.
Yeah.
It seems that the friends in this film, you know, Nate and Margaret, and they have a very interesting friendship. It seems like at times they flourish when they're apart. There's a certain moment in the film where they're gaining some distance from one another, and that's when they're able to grow. And so the film, it's a very touching film about friendship. There's a lot of positive things about their friendship, but it seems like there's also another level where the distance helps. It's like the friendship is limiting as well as enriching in a way. Was that something you...
Yeah, and this is true to me too. I think when I become really good friends with somebody, change becomes a little bit scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, changing together and maybe with the fear of changing too much that you'll grow apart and not be friends anymore. So that was certainly a conscious decision. That's really nice that you've noticed that. I think that's it really, is that, you know, just the fear of change and growing apart.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you can't say, oh, well, clearly he just looked at Harold and Maude and made that, because it's not that at all. I mean, because in that film, Maude is, you know, she's the life force. She's like, you know, get your act together, stop going to funerals, you know, have some fun. You know, well, I mean, well, she enjoys funerals for her own reasons, but I mean, she is the life force in that film. Margaret, on the other hand, she is someone who's just very deeply cynical because of all this personal pain in her life about, you know, relationships. So it's a similar journey that these characters take. It's sort of like both of them trying to figure out who they want to be. And in a way, Nate's kind of more her life force in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think when they have their breakup, it was time for them to think about their own life more, because they were so immersed in each other's life and they were there for each other all the time that was really limiting themselves to be able to try new things and, go for the big auditions and, you know, go to open mic nights and bomb. But, you know, because you don't have Nate across the hall to go have dinner with, you know, you actually just go out and be your own person and try to succeed with your personal dreams, not just, you know, holding a mic for, you know, your friend's movie.
Yes, and that's, you know, that's another thing I think is so moving about the film that I think other aspiring filmmakers or aspiring comics or aspiring anyone's can connect with, is the fact that you do have to bomb eventually. I mean, you do have to have those screw ups. You have to have those disappointments, because that will eventually... There's a scene where Nate is talking to, I think, his film teacher, and he's saying, like, you should have seen the stuff I was doing when I was your age. It's like you have to feel okay about screwing up to get to that point where you're really kind of refining your style. And do you kind of feel that with Nate and Margaret, that you really, you know, it had to take several short films, several attempts to figure out what your voice was?
Yes. I truly believe I could not have pulled this off without having that experience. I always think to myself, I wonder when I see, you know, first feature by a director and it's like a big, you know, big movie, and I don't see any credits, you know, prior to that film. I just want to know how they pulled that off, what they did. Were they just on sets?
Do they have a big eraser on IMDb and just,
delete?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. But for me, I certainly needed that experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this is, I think we talked about this a little bit earlier, but about how improv, you know, was the basis for your short films, but this was tightly scripted. And there, you felt oddly enough more freedom, I suppose, in a script, or you felt like it was more, you had more control, I guess, and freedom at the same time.
Sure. I mean, with a script, that's, you know, the worst case scenario, and that's what we're going to shoot. And we were totally happy with that if it was word for word throughout the entire movie. So we shot that. We shot it that way. And if we had the time, we would do some improv takes and you know, let the actors sort of explore and just say whatever they wanted to, you know, to see if it worked. And some of that made it into the film. But with a completely improvised movie, it's a crapshoot. For me, a lot of people it works beautifully with, but I've learned, you know, from doing these shorts and acting in films, that when I am making my own project, I think from this point on, it's going to be scripted.
Mm-hmm.
With the openness, you know, to do sure. improv around that.
Sure. And you're working with people who are good at improv. I mean, mm-hmm. Natalie West and people. So they mm-hmm. have that freedom, I suppose, as the actors. The thing I just find inspiring about, you know, independent films, first features that really do work, and I am a fan of this film. I'm just outing myself as that, is that they know how to affect an audience without making them feel manipulated. Mm-hmm. And what I think this film does at many points is it builds the audience desire. Like, there's some person in the film that you really want to see get a comeuppance, or there's someone in the film that you really want to see, you know, reconcile, you want some kind of reconciliation. And you play into those audience desires. It does work, but you make them wait for it. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a certain tension in some of the scenes where you're waiting, but it's the right amount of waiting. It makes the payoff feel more satisfying when you allow, you know, the characters to come to that conclusion, as opposed to kind of like, okay, now you can laugh, now you can relax.
Right, right.
Was that ever a challenge in the screenwriting process? Or it's like you didn't want to make the film feel manipulative in any way?
I guess it wasn't a conversation that Justin and I had,
mm-hmm.
you know, but we certainly wanted to make it out of, you know, out of the ordinary, you know, ABC, you know. Well, I mean, I think it kind of has that too,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, specifically what?
Okay, well here's the one. I don't want to give anything away. I'm not going to give away too many things. There's a wonderful, probably my favorite scene in the movie, this restaurant scene.
Yeah.
Between Nate and he does find a boyfriend, you know, played by Connor McCahill, and they come to this sort of, you know, realization that neither of them are who they thought they were. You know, not, you know, good or bad, I'm not saying, but it's like they're learning more about each other.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain payoff to that scene that is so, I can imagine it getting a huge laugh in the theater. Mm. Like, cause I was laughing out loud watching it just at home, which is, I love when that happens. But
yeah.
But was there a certain challenge to making that scene work the way it did, as far as like, was it ever shorter? Was it ever longer? Did you, cause I think that scene, the rhythm of it really works.
It was much longer. Mm. Originally we, you know, cut a lot of the dead air out, and there's some of that there, you know, those awkward
sure.
silences, which Justin and I thrive on, but
yeah, that's sort of a lot of your short films. It's the awkwardness that you're getting into,
yeah.
you know, the relationship.
Yeah, pulling out the painful feeling. Yeah, yeah. I mean, we tightened it up, shortened it a lot. There was some lines that felt repetitive, you know,
mm-hmm.
and so really, you know, just shortening it up, tightening it up. It wasn't something where nothing was like working, or you know, the end mm-hmm. always sort of was there, and it was
yeah.
you know, that. Ooh, okay.
It's, yeah,
that last,
yeah,
like, yeah. screw you.
Because it just gets increasingly funny with, I think there's a pan down of the camera, and that's all I'll say, but it really works.
Yeah.
But
that's one of my favorite scenes in the movie, too.
Yeah, well, because I was thinking with,
visually,
like,
too. I mean,
oh, yeah.
The Breakfast Club where we shot is just beautiful for that.
Mm-hmm.
The sunlight coming in and the flowers, and we had the right amount of extras that day. That was sort of a struggle throughout the movie.
Sure, yeah.
We need 50 people and, you know, 10 show up.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, and it's also, I mean, it's, as you said, with the location, it's bright sunlight. It looks very,
yeah.
It looks like the ideal place for a date
right.
that goes well in this
right.
and this doesn't. But it seems like that's also a running theme in your films, is that something, it's very endearing, the story's very endearing, the character's endearing, and then all of a sudden there's just this
mm-hmm.
turn,
mm-hmm.
this like
yeah.
left turn that just like, you know, it's like grueling,
yeah,
but
right,
it's,
yeah.
but that's what's interesting. And I think you've said in the past that Christopher Guest, Todd Solondz are two touchstones for you in that,
mm-hmm,
in that realm.
Mm-hmm. Anything yeah. super awkward and funny yet devastating is just great to me.
Well, what is it about that darker stuff? Because this film isn't exactly dark, but there are some painful moments.
I think
what attracts you to that?
It's just truer, really, to me. It's simply put, you know, I think it would just be too easy to write just a totally happy movie throughout with all the normal things that you're used to seeing in movies, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it just makes me laugh.
Mm-hmm. it feels more visceral to you, do you think, like,
yeah,
as a viewer, like they're really going for the guttural, and that they're not holding back exactly,
yeah.
Which I know, I mean, Todd Solondz, if you're going to use him
oh, yeah.
as an inspiration, I mean, it's just like throwing a bomb in the audience, I guess,
yeah.
is what one of my friends said. It's like he saw that in its premiere, and like half the audience loved it, and the other
uh-huh.
audience hated the audience who loved it, and it was just like a huge, almost altercation broke out in the theater. Is
which
that,
film was that?
It was Happiness, which
oh.
was Solondz's second, sort
mm-hmm.
of like his calling card, but...
Mm-hmm.
Is that sort of the sort of audience reaction you like, where it's like kind of inspiring debate among the audience?
I think so. Maybe not to that extreme. I mean, I've showed the film to a couple of audiences just sort of privately, and maybe they were being nice, but I haven't seen that sort of split.
Well, sure. And this is a much, I guess I'm lighter. Talking more about like I love you this much, like, you know, it's Untied's Irregular Fruit. I mean, they do have a certain, you know, caustic edge at the end, which is
yeah,
very unexpected.
Okay,
and,
yeah.
And entertaining. But no, I mean, this film is quite lovely. And I think that people, I mean, Tyler Ross, and I think you saw him in The Wise Kids, mm-hmm. Stephen Cohen's film. That was his... Yeah. Kind of his breakout role, and so what about him made you go like, that's who I want playing the version of me, not really a version of me, but like someone who's somewhat reflective of my behavior?
Well, I saw an early rough cut of The Wise Kids, and at that time point in relation to the movie, we were just getting ready to start our casting process. So I was just sort of always, you know, anything mm-hmm. I was watching, I was thinking about it.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
That person would be good for this role, or, you know. And so I saw him in that, and I knew he was local and he would, you know, probably show up to an audition. And so we just asked him and he showed up and just blew it out of the water. So
yeah. And yeah. Was there something you were looking for the actors you were considering for Nate that you needed, some quality that you knew that character had to possess?
Not really. We saw so many different kinds, you know. Not really. There was not a very specific description. Just young, you know, a good actor. You know, it really wasn't anything super, super specific.
Mm-hmm. Well, what he has to me in this film is a certain, a real just inherent sweetness mm-hmm. that you don't feel is you feel like it's genuine.
Yeah.
And he has a vulnerability that I think people, you know, young people who are, you know, regardless of their orientation, who are exploring their sexuality, I think will really be able to relate to his journey in this mm-hmm. film.
Right.
And the line that stuck out to me, it was also from the restaurant scene where Nate says, "I'm sorry, I'm not gay enough for you."
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that line, it really resonates with people who are exploring their sexuality and find that they don't fulfill, you know, the expectations necessarily of a more experienced partner. And I thought there was some real, real honesty in that scene. I wonder, what made you want to include that in the film, that line?
I mean, again, it's that, you know, James, the character who plays Nate's boyfriend in the movie, mm-hmm. was sort of a mashup of guys that I dated in college. And, you know, being 19-ish, you don't know what you want, and you don't care about hurting other people, you know?
Yeah.
And I sort of felt like I was the butt end of that a lot because I was so naive and, you know, just wanted to love and,
sure.
you know, be in love. So I thought it, you know, to me, it was just important to have an element of that in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
There was never a point where I said that to anybody, but, you know, some people I met were more outgoing, more flamboyant, perhaps less. So I just want, it was just a mashup of all of that and just wanted to have an element of, you know, true to life of me in the movie.
Absolutely. And I think it's very relatable. And I like to say, you know, regardless of orientation, because it's okay. You know, obviously I think Film Out is a perfect showcase for this film, but I think there's still a stigma sometimes with, like, you know, the LGBT festivals where it's like, well, this
sure.
is the gay film, let's just kind of have it on the side here. It's like, why can't it just be a universal
right
film?
And that was actually a something very important to Justin and I, and our producer Ash Christian. He said to me that he was drawn to it because it wasn't just a big gay movie, you know. It was sort of half and half, I guess. You
mm-hmm.
know, it would appeal to a broader audience than the many films you'll see, you know, and when you click on gay and lesbian, you know, on Amazon or something.
Yeah.
So that wasn't a conversation that we had, and that was important to me that it had mass appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's great that we're playing, you know, these gay and lesbian festivals.
Yeah.
My dream, of course, would be to play straight festivals
sure,
that don't just
sure.
program gay and lesbian films, which I guess is happening through the Siskel Center, and we're getting a run in a theatrical run in New York.
Oh, fantastic.
So, you know,
fantastic.
Those aren't geared towards gay and lesbian movies, which is really great.
Absolutely. And are you thinking of any sort of like online distribution or any sort of where will this film be available eventually?
We do have distribution worldwide, and our streaming cable VOD, iTunes, and Amazon streaming starts May 29th. So that's really soon. And then our DVD will be released mid-August.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well then I guess I lied when I said that the restaurant scene was my favorite, because it is one of my favorites, but there's another one that I'm forgetting that I have to ask you about, which is how did you conceive of and shoot the sequence in the film where these two alienated people are linked by a fireworks display in Chicago? I thought that was so elegant. I'd never really seen anything, you know, really like that before, and it was such an interesting use of the Chicago locations and a way of just, you know, metaphorically linking these people. How did that...
Honestly, it was just a finishing touch. It was in the script.
Mm-hmm.
But originally it was written the exact same way without mentioning the fireworks.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to make it clear that they are apart in the same city at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It was just sort of just linking those scenes together to know that it's the same night, the same exact time.
Mm-hmm.
There really wasn't like a metaphor or anything for the fireworks.
Well, I guess, and again, this
I just
is like,
it was a nice visual.
Yeah, I guess that's the fun thing for me about talking with a filmmaker is like, and they get to see too some of like the interpretations someone takes from that. And for me, it's like, you know, they've been apart, they've been estranged, these two friends, and now they seem more together than ever at this moment when they're technically apart, but they seem together in their shared misery, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so, I guess seeing the fireworks, you might think it would be nice if they were enjoying them together, but...
Yeah. did you shoot that at the same...
The fireworks?
Yeah, how did you capture that?
Well, the fireworks were put in later, actually.
Okay, well, see, that's good. You could have fooled me.
So. Cinematographer, editor, special effects genius, Brian Levin, we went to Navy Pier one night and just shot the fireworks display there for a good, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, and then laid them in over Navy Pier, you know, when she's driving, and then between the buildings when Nate's walking downtown.
What did you learn on this set that you'd like to bring to the next one?
That we need more time. We shot this movie in 2 weeks, and, you know, I've seen the movie probably 200 times, and I still can't believe that we were in these locations for enough time and pulled it off.
Mm-hmm.
So really just more time and more prep time, too. To really think about each shot and, you know, storyboard. We didn't do any of that, storyboarding.
Mm-hmm.
There's certainly conversations that happen between Brian, our cinematographer, and Justin and I and, you know, everyone. But, this movie happened so quickly once we were done writing it that there wasn't a lot of time that we had to just sit down and really plan out things.
Mm-hmm.
So, and even, you know, the sequence where they're kind of going around Chicago,
doing
their thing in the beginning, was just all run and gun. And, you know, we had maybe four crew members those days, as opposed to the normal 20 that we had the rest of the time.
Sure.
So, you know, we were on the bus with Natalie West and Tyler and I and, you know, a camera. So, but I guess, you know, those things we probably would have just done that way anyway, but just having the time to set up shots, you know, visually, storyboarding and having more time shooting.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for being on the program, Nate. I really appreciate it. And I hope a lot of people see this film. It's a wonderful film. Nate and Margaret, it opens at the Gene Siskel Film Center June 8th. And for more information, you can visit siskelfilmcenter.org. That concludes today's episode of Indie Outlook. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm, and I invite you to tune in next time for more coverage of the latest and greatest in modern independent cinema. Till then, I'll be on the lookout.